Welcome to the Reclaim Your Rise podcast. My name is Lauren Bongiorno, nationally board certified health coach and founder and CEO of Risely Health, where we help people and families impacted by type 1 diabetes take ownership over their lives so that they can transform with more freedom and confidence. Everyone has a different reason to be here. You might be seeking knowledge, support, or community, but at your core, I know that you long for something deeper. You're here for transformation. And that's what the Reclaim Your Rise podcast is all about.
I went into the doctor's office with my mom to see the endocrinologist. And the endocrinologist was like, your A1C is at a 13. And my mom got very upset. The doctor said, well, she's just going through her rebellious phase. And I paused in that moment. And I think I felt a lot of shame and I felt a lot of doubt. But I also, and I didn't say it, but I also was like, no, I'm not. Like, I'm not going through a rebellious phase. Like, I am the opposite of a rebel.
A quick reminder before we start the show that nothing you hear on the Reclaim Your Rise podcast should be a substitute for personalized professional medical advice. Please always consult your physician or other medical professional before making any changes to your diet, insulin dosages, or healthcare plan. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Reclaim Your Rise podcast. This is your host, Lauren Bongiorno, and I am so excited for you to hear today's episode. I brought on Jess Bonilla, Risely's Director of Coaching, and my good friend to co-host with me. And we were supposed to film this a couple of days ago, but I wasn't feeling 100%, and I was like, nope, I gotta feel 100%. I gotta bring everybody the best. So we pushed it off, and I'm so glad that we did because this convo was so much more aligned than it would have been and truly full of so many juicy stories and takeaways for you. So in the episode, you'll hear us share the synchronous story of how we started coaching together years ago, the biggest belief blocks we see in clients and have experienced personally around exercise, nutrition, and diabetes. And definitely listen until the end for our lightning round and Jess's answer on why she thinks it's important for us to share why we reclaim our rise. It gave me full body chills and it just really pulls the whole episode together. So I hope you enjoy it as much as we had fun recording it. And if you're ready, let's rise. Hello, Jessica. How are you today?
Hi. I'm so good. I'm really excited for this.
I normally call you Jess, but Sometimes Jessica comes out. It comes out. Our team, I feel like we do Jessica in big capital letters when we're like, we're really excited.
We're like, yeah.
So I'm so happy you're co-hosting with me today. You are the first kind of second voice we're bringing onto the podcast. And I was like, no, it has to be Jess. Yeah. It can't be anybody else.
Well, thank you. I'm excited. Like I said, this is going to be fun.
Of course. So Jess, introduce yourself to the people. Who are you?
Yes, good question. Because I'm not very active on social media. It's just not for me, you know? It's for some people, but it's not for me. Yeah, so it makes sense that people might not know who I am. But I am Jessica Bonilla, and I am with Risely. I'm with the team. I'm the director of coaching and enrollment. And me personally, I've had type 1 diabetes for about 17 years now. I was counting that up with Trista, one of the other health coaches on our team the other day, because I was like, I always forget how long I've had diabetes. But 17 years, I was diagnosed when I was 15 years old. I just became a mom. I have a little one. He is 8 months. almost 8 months old, and just living here, doing all the things.
Yeah, there's so much more like interesting things about you that maybe will come out in the podcast, but Just so everybody understands the closeness to, and I guess the company culture at Risely, like we're very invested in everybody's lives, and we're a small team, right? We're a team of pretty much like 9 people, and I felt like I birthed Avery in a way. Like I was hysterical crying when he was born. When I got those pictures, my heart, I was just like, oh my gosh. If you have not seen Avery yet, like Jess is not super like active on social media, right. But like go check her profile out because he's a little man. He needs to model. You know that, right?
Every once in a while, I'll stick like an Instagram story picture out. My husband will post something about him and then he'll be like, you have to repost. So I'll literally go into Instagram just to put that up and then get back to whatever I'm doing. So,
He's a very proud dad. He is the best dad. But okay, I think we need to, before we obviously dive into the more, serious things, or not that this can be serious. It's always fun with us, but we need to tell a story of how we met, because you've been with Risley and, me working for what, like 3 years now? Almost 3 years?
It's been a while.
Yeah.
I want to say three, maybe almost four. I don't know. I'm really bad at math,
It
but
feels
it's
like
been
a
a
while.
while. It's been
It
a
has.
while.
So we need to tell the story of how we met, because it's kind of crazy. And it's also, Jess, you're a very spiritual person. I'm a very spiritual person. I think, of course, our unity story and the way we came together was like nothing but the stars aligning. So why don't you tell a little bit of that, your end of it, and then I'll tell mine.
Yeah, sure. So I guess, back in the day, I was a little bit more active on social media, and I had been following Lauren for a while. And this is actually a fun fact, Lauren. There is a long time ago, you were like, I want to get rid of some clothes. And you actually ended up sending me like a pair of your shorts or something like
Wait a second, shut up. How did I not know this?
It was a very long time ago. Anyways,
Wait, no,
I
I'm sorry. We can't breeze by that. Because okay, so first of all, I'm obviously not a fashion influencer. Like I'm just like so I remember it was only one time I've done it before, and it's because my mom had me and my sister were at my mom my our parents' house, and my mom was like, "You girls are just, storing all your clothes here, and like just you have to get rid of some things. Like you've had them forever, like you're not wearing these things anymore." And Dana and I looked at each other, and Dana like is very much in like the more fashions follows fashion people on
Right.
On, I almost said insulin on Instagram. That was like an autocorrect, but like in my mouth. On Instagram, and so she sees people like selling them on like Poshmark or whatever it was. And so yeah, I remember literally that exact time that I, the only one time in my life, and I sent you shorts. Do you wear them still?
No, I'm pretty sure I donated them.
Oh
But
my
I was like,
gosh.
oh, this is I. Again, fun fact, I stored it away in my memories and I was like, this is the perfect time for it to come out. But I have been following you on Instagram for a while and I was a former, some people may or may not know, I was a former speech and language pathologist and I was working in hospitals. I was a professor at NYU and there's a lot of things going on, but I wasn't really happy with that. So I had started exploring other options. One thing led to another. There's a lot of stories here that I could tell, but one thing led to another, and it led me to IIN and really looking into health coaching a little bit more for myself and to help others. And so I ended up taking that route, and I had messaged Lauren. I think maybe I had sent her an email or something like that. And Lauren, you responded very generously and nicely. But I was always just kind of like watching. I was like, I feel like there's something here. There's something here. Then you had posted that you needed like an intern or something like that. And I was like, all right, let me reach out. Maybe this is my moment. This is my shot. So I reached out and I think we set up a call to talk. And I remember I was working in the hospital and I like, had a 15-minute break at work, and I was like, okay, I'm gonna run out and talk to Lauren and like just pitch myself, hit it, do great. And we had this really, great conversation. You told me about, what you were looking for. And at the end of it, you're like, I really love your energy, but you're overqualified for this. You're like, it's not the right fit in a very gracious way, of course. Like, again, it was
Right,
a
I
lovely
couldn't have you
conversation.
like organizing Google Drive for me.
Yeah. Yeah. You were like, you just, no, this isn't for you. But I love this energy. You said like, I'm basically gonna tuck it away for a later time, a later date. And I was like, you know what? Okay. I felt okay with that. And also really appreciated that because you were honest. You're like, you're overqualified for this. I didn't need to be organizing Google Drive folders, and I probably would have been very bad at that.
And you would have been
So,
unhappy.
and I would have
Yeah.
been unhappy, and I would have been unhappy. So there's that. But then I think you should tell this part because this is, I don't know how it happened from your perspective,
Okay, so
but
I'll chime in here. So everything is accurate so far, well, from your end. So I talked to like 10 or 15 people for on that day, and I think it's important to know that back then, I don't know what year it was, but I was coaching by myself and I was seeing like 30 clients like at once. It was just insane, like the influx. And also, I was one of the first early on people to be health coaching in the diabetes space. And so I didn't, there was nobody to look to. There was nobody to say, like, what's the next step? And do you bring on a second coach? And what does that look like? And am I ready for that? And all of that. But I had this instinct, like, initially when we spoke, like, she's going to be a great health coach. Like, she is going to be amazing. And I can't wait to see, like, what comes of it for her, whether it's, with me or on her own path. And so it had to be, 6 months later, a year later. It was a while
A
later, right?
while.
It was a while. It was like a year. And in that year, I just became really burnt out. I was putting everybody first before myself. I was not walking my talk, and I was helping everybody else with their diabetes. But for me, like, my health was suffering in a way because I was taking clients at like 6 a.m. and 9 p.m. like every day, weekends. It was just insane. And I was like, this isn't sustainable. So I finally came to the conclusion that I, needed to hire another coach. And one of my mentors was like, who do you think? And I was like, there's nobody. Like, I need somebody who's going to care as much as I do and who understands the actual health coaching techniques and isn't just like a type one that's saying, oh, I want to help people. Like, it's more complicated than that. It's they need to have this and they need to have this and they need to have this. And I was focused on like all of what there wasn't was like what there wasn't and all the limitations instead of thinking about what are the possibilities, right? And I think that I ultimately surrendered to this thought of, you know what, there is somebody out there and I need to start thinking about that and kind of calling that in. And I swear to you, it was not even like two days later, I was falling asleep. It was like 11, 10:30 at night, like late. I go to bed at like 9 o'clock, so it's probably like 10 o'clock, 10:30. And as you're in, I was in that like half dream state where you're like half in, half out, and you can hear what's going on, but like you're like literally seconds away from falling asleep. And out of nowhere, it is the strangest thing. Jess's name, your name just pops into my head. It's just like Jess Bonilla. And now I can't even remember like all of Chris's cousins' names, right? Like my fiance, like he has a huge Croatian family, but like all of, the people at the weddings and this and that I've met for 10 years, like it's a challenge. But for whatever reason, I remembered your name from like a year previously, and I hadn't even seen you since then, talked to you since then or whatnot. And it was just an initial, it was like, it hit me with a, like a, it hit me like bricks. I felt like it, a bunch of bricks hit me, and I was like, I need to reach out to her. So I sent her this like cryptic DM message, literally put my phone down, went to sleep, forgot I messaged her in the morning time, woke up, and then you had messaged me back. And I was like, oh my God, like, what did I do? And we got on a call. No, we got on a, yeah, we got on a call, whatever, it all, transpired. And we met in the city in New York City, and it was, the rest is history. And we started building from there and working with hundreds of clients.
Exactly. And it was just, it's so interesting because, again, it's like synchronicities. Because that same week, I had been thinking to myself, you had like popped into my mind too. You're like, I was thinking, I wonder what Lauren's doing. Like, I wonder what she's up to. She seems like she's really like killing it in this diabetes health coaching space. Maybe I'll reach out to her again. And then lo and behold, there you were in my DMs when I checked them. And here we are. Here we
And
are.
here we are podcasting together. But no, in all seriousness, I mean, over the years, we've together, I feel like we've grown so much, and we've in personal lives, but also as coaches and also as, leaders of the Rise Lead team. I consider you obviously there right next to me. And I think culture is so important, and culture fit at Rise Lead is really important. And we lead with impact, we lead with integrity, we lead with the clients first, and how we can just, not even clients, but like it's just the overall community, right? And how we can learn from every single person that we interact with, whether it's somebody who comes through a course or a cornerstone class or the Diabetic Health Journal, whatever it is, it's like, how can we take their experiences and how does that scale, right? How does that maybe, their experience, maybe it's happening to, more people, and we can speak to that and maybe hit somebody and get them to feel seen and heard. So, I want to dive into having conversation around beliefs on three specific areas. So exercise, nutrition, and relationship with T1D.
Oh yeah, juicy topics. I think
juicy topics. Like I was trying to, like there was obviously so many, but I was like, let's distill this down. So let's go through each of them and just talk a little bit about what we see are challenges for people in their beliefs around doing things a certain way and maybe even personal anecdotes or things like that. So let's tap on exercise first. So with you, what beliefs do you see hold people back with exercise, blood sugar management, diabetes?
Oh, there are so many, but I think it boils down to like not being able to feeling like you're not succeeding in the movement that you want to participate in because of blood sugars, whether that's like, you know, stopping a certain type of exercise or again, movement that brings you joy. Like I've heard people say, you know, I used to love taking long bike rides, but I can't manage my blood sugars, so I just stopped. Or I really had this goal of running a marathon and I am too scared to do it because of my blood sugars and I don't know what that's going to look like or feel like. So that's what I'm hearing a lot is like, you know, stopping yourself from doing it. Another big thing is feeling like it gets interrupted. You know, the movement gets interrupted, the workout gets interrupted. The thing that you're doing, going on a hike, whatever, gets interrupted. And then it's kind of also bringing you to think about all of the other things that are going wrong, whether that means like, oh, I'm, you know, if I'm going low, I have to have a snack and I really just don't want to have a snack right now. Or I'm making everybody else stop because I need help. Or I'm going high and I need to take insulin. And that's really frustrating because I feel like, you know, I'm doing this type of movement to make myself feel better. And now I'm having to stop to focus on diabetes. So I would say like those are two really big aspects of exercise that come up as blocks for individuals who have type 1. And again, it's not only those areas, but if I were to pinpoint two big ones, mm-hmm. I would say those are them.
Yeah. And I'd also add to the exercise for the sole focus of weight. And when people don't see those results quick enough because maybe they're mm-hmm. having to stop and like chug juice or they're, you know, going low afterwards and so they have to have this extra meal that they weren't planning on or whatever it was, in their minds they feel like that's a defeat, right? They feel like this diabetes is
goal.
Exactly, exactly. When instead the commonality of all these things that we're talking about is how could we A, like get ahead, right? Get ahead and become more proactive than reactive, but also B, understand that with diabetes, it's the long game, right? It's not, it's focusing on exercise for all the amazing things it does, right? Insulin sensitivity and improving your mood and energy and motivation and strength and all, confidence in yourself, right? Exactly. And so how can we reframe our relationship with exercise to be able to feel successful in it, but also not see it as a means to an end instead of enjoying the process of it and all the immediate gratification things it can bring to you?
Exactly. Exactly. And, you know, again, a personal story here, but I, you know, as I mentioned before, I recently had a baby and, you know, a baby flips your world around for many reasons. But one of those things that changed for me was the way that I was moving after pregnancy, after giving birth. Sure, I kept my body moving. I tried to keep as active as possible by taking walks and, you know, getting on a bike and doing those types of things. But me, truly, for me, I love feeling strong. And I am that person who's like picking up the heavy weights, who is, you know, getting into the gym, loving that atmosphere and loving the feeling of my body can do amazing things. And I wasn't doing that after I had given birth because I was being a mom, because I felt like I didn't have the time, I was tired, all of these things. And then a light bulb went off and I was like, this needs to change. I have to make a change here. I feel like my body, every time I move, it hurts. Like I notice these little things about myself because I've been doing this type of work for a while, not only with other people, but with myself, understanding myself. I was like, my body aches and I'm not used to that. And I feel like when I pick my son up, yeah, I can do it, but I can't do it with the strength that I've known before. And so that really motivated me to say, like, okay, something needs to change here. I worked with my partner and I was like, okay, let's sit down. How can we make this happen? And true to mom life, the only time I can make it happen is very, very early in the morning, like 4:35 a.m. But made it happen. And it's now I've, been consistent with this routine for myself for about a month and a half. And I feel such a difference. I feel such a difference. And it wasn't easy. It wasn't easy to notice that like I needed to change something about what I was doing. And it also wasn't easy with my blood sugars because, that changed, my patterns changed. But with a little bit of understanding and patience and consistency, I'm back, baby. I'm back.
Back and better than ever. But it's so interesting too, because it was so clear. Like I could see your energy, and I was obviously giving you space because you just had Avery. I mean, he's 7 months now, right? Seven.
He'll be 8 at the end of the month.
Oh my gosh. What are we doing for his first birthday? I'm so excited.
I don't know. We'll talk plans
We'll
later.
talk plans. But yeah, like I noticed such a difference in your energy, and it's expected, right? Like I imagine that when you have a baby, you're not the first woman to go through this, and or first person to have a baby and go through this. You have this adjustment period, and I knew it was going to happen, but I could also see from the other end, like she's out of alignment. And so what I think you did really well was you gave yourself space, but you also were self-aware enough to realize like why you were feeling off other than just, hormones. And it was about creating that space for yourself again, right? And making it a non-negotiable. And yeah, I can imagine it's so hard to get up at 4:30 and 5 and work out that early, but you reap the rewards from it because your energy is better and your blood sugars are better and your mood is better and all of that.
Yeah, and how I feel about myself, that's completely changed. Again, like I feel strong, and that's what I was going for. Like for me, exercise, I exercise to feel strong, to feel like I can move my body in the ways that I want to move it, to feel like I can pick up my son and hold him all day long without my back hurting at the end of the day. Like those are the types of things that me personally, I'm searching for. And when I work with clients, when we work with clients, that's what we want to help them realize too, is like, what else are you doing this for? And that connection just creates such a deeper connection to yourself, but also to the thing that you're doing because it motivates you. Like, at least for me, if I were only to be working out to like fit into a pair of jeans, I know that I would lose steam fast. And I'd probably get really frustrated because after a week of like going all out, I still wouldn't fit in those jeans. That's just me personally. I know that I wouldn't. But, if I'm reframing it and I'm like, you know what? I just want to feel better in my body. I want to feel strong. To me, that's motivating because I can see the progress there. I can see the results and I feel that. I feel it.
Absolutely. And you bring up a good point too about having your why and your reason. And I told this story on Instagram a couple of weeks ago, but I spoke to somebody who had like a 9 point, it was like a 9.0 or 9.2, something like that, A1C. And she was applying for coaching. And I was saying, like, what's your why? Like, why do you want to do this? And she was like, I don't even kind of know. It's just because my A1C is a 9.0. And I was like, well, you're not gonna this coaching isn't going to be something that you're going to like be dying to do if you don't have that motivation. Like I can't pull you into it. I can't force you into it. And I know it's going to be amazing for you, but like you need to be the one driving. And she was like, well, I don't know. My mood's fine. My energy's fine. My sleep's fine. Like everything was just fine. And when we got to the bottom of it, we realized that it was fine because her A1C had been so high for so long that her body had adapted to that. And so she didn't even know like how good she could possibly feel and really where she was being limited in her life because she was so used to feeling crummy and how she was with that A1C. So, you know, all to say it really is important. And I think the majority of people that you talk to on enrollment calls after they apply for coaching are people who are saying like, I'm at my breaking point. Like I realize like I'm blocking myself. I'm getting in the way and I want to be able to have a better life. Would you say that that's accurate? Like most people have a bigger why.
100%. There's usually a bigger why, whether it's related to, again, yourself wanting to get out of your own way, whether it's a family, you know, that you're wanting to just show up for more, you know, but at the end of the day, it like boils down to not prioritizing yourself for a lot of people, just, you know, work, life, families, relationships, all of these things come up in your life all the time. They never stop. Even when we think, you know, you're going through a good period, quote unquote, you know, there are always things that are going to pop up. And it's about refocusing and reevaluating all of these pieces and getting back to yourself, prioritizing yourself, putting yourself first. That's a really hard lesson I had to learn for myself because I feel like if you prioritize yourself and you put yourself first and you refocus, you are able to give back to other people in such a greater way.
Absolutely.
That connection is really important for us too. Yes, it's about you, but that connection is like always for a lot of people, like that second close to follow. Like, yes, I want to do this for myself, but I also want to connect to other people. I want to, you know, give back to other people. I want to be able to show up for the people that I love. So that's what I think.
Yeah.
Personally.
No, I think a lot of people can see that and will resonate with that a lot. But let's head over to nutrition. The nutrition beliefs. This is like could be a whole episode in its own, I feel like.
Oh, yeah.
But I want you to share how you eat and then how I eat because
polar, you know, opposites here.
Polar opposites. I will start by saying Jess's husband is a fantastic cook, chef. Well, he's not a chef, he's a police officer, but he was on Chopped, right?
Yes, he was on Chopped back in the day. Mm-hmm.
So he is like cooking Jess up like meals all the time left and right. And, you know, eats when we eat and we eat differently because you guys are big meat eaters, right?
We are big meat eaters. And that's changed. Here's the thing is like there's been seasons of different things that we've tried, experimentation. But right now we are in the season of we love meat. We're meatheads, I think.
Okay. So you have Jess over there who does that. I'm over here. I've been a pescatarian for, I think, like 11 years now. And what's most important to share, I think, is that when I first started out coaching, it was a lot about my experience and what worked for me. And always, of course, letting the client lead or you know, letting them figure out what works best for them. But there was always things in the back of my head of, well, like this works for me and maybe this could possibly work for them, right? Whereas now we have a whole team of coaches and everybody eats in different ways. And there's obviously so much like research and studies that we lean on in science for working with our clients. But I think it's about one size doesn't fit all, right? And it's about no matter what you want to eat, how you want to eat, it's an integrative approach with a lot of different areas of blood sugar management and techniques and exercise and insulin sensitivity and hormones and that holistic approach. And, you know, at the end of the day, you don't want to have to be on a diet for like your whole life. So like, how can you also let go of like food rules? Like that's a big piece of it too, is like, yeah, I'm pescatarian, but it's not, it's for more just for me. It like, I feel better that way. It's, it doesn't feel restricting. It's ethical for me. And for you, like you just eat and flow. And sometimes you eat a lot more meat and sometimes you eat a lot less, but it's not like you're 100% keto or anything like that. So
no.
What do we think the beliefs are around food that get people stuck sometimes that you see a lot of?
Yeah, I see a lot of like all or nothing. Like, you know, it has to be either keto or low carb or eat whatever I want whenever I want. But it's like these extremes that I see. And a lot of times when I'm having these conversations, they might explain that for them, it feels like an extreme, like they have to choose one or the other. And then ultimately, it ends up being that feeling of like, I was on the wagon and then I fell off the wagon. I was dieting and restricting in some way. And then I feel like I went to the other end of that spectrum. And now I'm back, you know, at square one. So it's a lot of, again, it's like the polarity. It's one or the other, when I think what most people want is to have that flexibility, to have that freedom, to say, I get to choose when I want to, and then enjoy that moment and be present. And I'm working with someone right now who is more recently diagnosed. And she had told me, you know, I am terrified of carbs because I had a few pretzels and I saw what it did to my blood sugars. And I was like, I'm not doing that again. You know, it's hard because you see the effects on your blood sugars and you see what that does. And you wonder to yourself, is this right?
Or is it worth it to be doing this?
Yeah. Or is it worth it? Is it worth it? I think through our work together, we're helping them understand what is worth it for you? What feels good for you? What does that balance or that freedom or flexibility look like and feel like? Does it mean that when you go out to dinner with your family, you get to enjoy, we always say pizza, so I'm trying not to say pizza, but I'm going to say pizza. You're enjoying the pizza with them just like everybody else, right? Or is it that you really do want to have the salad instead? Right? And either option is fine, but it's about what you want and what feels good to you and figuring that out. And so with this particular client that I was talking about before, she had gone on a trip and she was like, I realized that like, I do want to have those things. I do want to experiment with those things. And the other day she messaged me and she was like, guess who had Thai food and was in range all night long?
Oh,
and it was like amazing, you know, like because she was so used to that before. She was so used to going out to eat and experiencing that with the people that she wanted to surround herself with. And so she was able to have that experience, enjoy it, and feel complete with that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think everybody goes through different phases from when they're diagnosed too, because at newly diagnosed, that might be an experience for some people, and then it could change over time. Or somebody can be new, two people can be newly diagnosed, but one person could have that experience of the client you're working with right now, but another person could have the experience you had, which I know when you were 15 and diagnosed, which, correct me if I'm wrong, kind of was like, well, this is just this thing and I'm getting diagnosed, but I'm not going to stop living.
Yep. Oh, that was me for sure. I think it was for a few reasons. I think it was because I truly had no idea what was going on in my body and what diabetes actually meant. But it was also like, I'm 15. I've had, you know, the sodas. I've had, you know, the foods. I come from a Latin family and Latin roots. And our diet is based in, you know, rice and beans and, you know, delicious carbs, plantains, like all of these yummy things. And I was like, I'm not going to stop eating those things. I'm not going to stop living my life. I'm entering high school. I'm not going to like be different from my friends. So yeah, I kind of was just like, I'm gonna keep going. I'm gonna just, but I didn't necessarily take care of the diabetes part of that. I took that approach of, I'm going to open up the doors here. And my doctor also told me that, you know, like eat whatever you want, just take insulin for it, which for the most part, I would take insulin for it. Not because I didn't want to take insulin for it, but just because I would forget to take insulin for it. And yeah, I took that approach until I realized, ooh, maybe this isn't working for me. This doesn't make me feel the best. And it was a like combination of changing my approach with food, but also changing my approach with my management and how I was showing up for myself and taking care of myself.
And you know, it comes down to it with nutrition beliefs is that everybody's going to have, right, those different experiences based on their personality, based on their family, based on their, you know, what their doctor's telling them and all these different, you know, factors. But I think what's important to know is to ask yourself, like, are the beliefs that I have around food and nutrition in regards to my diabetes, like, is it serving me? It's either yes or no, right? Like it's serving me, yes, or it's not serving me. And if it's not serving you, then what are you doing holding on to that belief? Right? So for me, like my journey with diabetes or with food was similar to yours. Like first, you know, I was diagnosed at 7. So I guess first 10 years with diabetes, it was like, you know, eat whatever, give insulin for it, and, you know, watch your sugars. And that was pretty much it. I rode the roller coaster. If I was high, I would correct. Then I would come down and I was like, all right, time to eat. And then I would go back up. But like, it was what it was. And when I got to college, that is when I said, you know what? That's not serving me anymore. I want to find a new thing to serve me, which was a diet and doing cleanses and doing high carb, low fat, or doing low carb, or not eating bread for as long as I possibly could, just to like see how long I can go and keep my numbers in range. And at the end of the day, like that came to a point where that served me for a little bit because I felt motivated and I was like, wow, I'm seeing great blood sugars and this is amazing. And it served me until it didn't. And that's, you know, you outgrow these things and you learn what works and what doesn't. But I would say the stretch that I've had personally since, you know, let's say at least, gosh, I don't even know, like 6 years, right? Where I haven't dieted, I haven't thought so much about food, it hasn't consumed my every, you know, thought process that I have throughout the day as much as, you know, it should, and to the point it has to with diabetes, obviously, like carb counting and things like that. But you know, it's, and my A1C is like a 5.6, right? And so it's balanced. Like, and that's what I think is the place that I hope a lot of people can come to is that like there is a place where it doesn't have to feel like an all or nothing. There is a place where you can find what works for your body, but like you have to do the work. You have to do the work on your thoughts, on your beliefs, which, you know, creates everything, your experiences in life.
And not only that, but these philosophies and beliefs that you have around these topics are going to change. They're not always going to stay the same. You know, they, for me, I dabbled in being vegan at one point. You know, I dabbled in trying a little bit lower carb. I realized very fast that wasn't for me. But like all of these things I've dabbled in, and you know, through pregnancy, my cravings and my needs changed as well. So the way that I was nourishing myself had to change. And so I think in addition to understanding that there can be a place where this feels easier and more balanced, there is also the thought that it's not always going to stay static and it's going to change, and that's okay. And that's to be expected.
Yeah, that fluidity and to allow yourself that flexibility, I think is the biggest thing. For sure. And I mean, talking about, you know, That's a good segue into relationship with diabetes. I was deciding between relationships with diabetes, like in, you know, partnerships, dating, all that. But that's like, and that, once again, we're going to have lots of episodes on this podcast.
More of these. Yeah, yeah.
So everybody listening, like, let us know what you want to hear. But for now, we're going to go relationship with T1D. So what was your relationship with T1D evolution, right? Like, how did it, what would you say like that evolution look like for you from when you were diagnosed? I know you talked about it a little bit about it with food, but just overall to that turning point of feeling this sense of freedom and more confidence with your diabetes.
Oh, what a loaded question, Lauren. But let me go back to the beginning. And I know that I came into diabetes like, all right, I'm just going to handle this. I'm going to do what I'm supposed to do. And at the same time, I don't know that I really allowed myself to process those feelings of my life looks a little bit different now. And looking back, I didn't know in that moment, but I was going through a grieving process. My family certainly was, because, you know, my grandparents who helped raise me were like hysterically crying, like, did we give this to her? There was this background of type 2 diabetes in my family. And so they were very concerned of like, did we give this to her? Was it our influences? What did we do wrong? And I think my parents were also kind of like, oh gosh, we just saw our daughter's life flash before our eyes and holy crap, like what the heck? Don't know how to deal with that. And so they also gave me a lot of that independence of like, okay, you have to take care of this. You have to take care of your diabetes. And so I had to buck up. I had to learn how to manage this diagnosis. I had to calm people down and say like, I'm okay. I've got this. You know, you didn't do anything wrong. It's just something that happened. And I had to move along and put on a brave face. And so I think with that, I pushed a lot of the feelings that I had and emotions that I had around it down. And I also had that want and need to be normal, to just hang out with my friends, go to high school, not think about poking myself and not think about wearing a pump with a bathing suit, you know, like all of these things. So I was like, you know what? I'm just going to live my life. I'm going to take insulin. And that's it. I'm pretty normal. And then there came a point where, like I said before, sometimes I would forget to take my insulin. And because I was just like in the moment and I didn't really realize the impact that that had on me when I wasn't taking my insulin. And I went into the doctor's office with my mom to see the endocrinologist. And the endocrinologist was like, your A1C is at a 13. And my mom got very upset. And the doctor said, well, she's just going through her rebellious phase. And I paused in that moment. And I think I felt a lot of shame and I felt a lot of doubt. But I also, and I didn't say it, but I also was like, no, I'm not. Like, I'm not going through a rebellious phase. Like, I am the opposite of a rebel. I am someone who follows the rules, who tries their best, who, you know, gets home at a certain time because my mom said so and I'm scared and I don't want to like break that rule. Like, I am not a rebel. I'm not a rebel, but I feel like that, I don't know. It changed the direction for me and my diabetes because I was like, you know what? Yeah, I'm a rebel now. So I'm going to live up to this expectation that someone else put on me that didn't know me, but they labeled me as a rebel. So, okay, I'm going to keep going. on this
Wow.
path.
It's almost like when somebody calls, when a doctor says non-compliant.
Right.
And we've had so many people come to us being like, I don't know. I just need support. Like, I need help.
Yeah.
I need a bigger toolbox. It's not that I don't want to be trying. Do you think I want to have this A1C, or do you think I want to feel crappy, or do you think that I don't want to get pregnant and I want to, have these high numbers? No, it's just like,
No.
I'm not non-compliant. I just don't know how to manage my diabetes.
Exactly. Yeah. And like looking back, if I had the confidence and the voice that I have now, I definitely would have said to that doctor, and it's a well-meaning doctor, by the way, amazing endocrinologist, had all the accolades, like smart person, maybe just trying to relate to my mom in some way. I don't know. Like everyone has a reason, and that's okay. She was doing her best. My mom was doing her best. But if I had the same confidence and understanding that I have now, I would have stopped that doctor and said, "No, I'm actually not going through a rebellious phase. I need help. I need you to help me. I need you to help me understand what this is. I need you to help me sort through these feelings because it's a lot. And I need you to, help me understand what does insulin do to my body and when should I be taking it and like how should I be taking it?" And I don't know, so many things. But at that point in time, I wasn't going through a rebellious phase. I needed help. I needed help.
Wow.
Yeah.
Whew. Wow. I
It's
mean, that's a lot. And I
a
think
lot.
your experience scales. I think a lot of people probably feel that too, and that lack of support and that lack of miss, like not being understood, right? And feeling isolated and feeling alone in it. And we've all been there in some way or another. But you brought up a really good point about those feelings, right? And suppressing those feelings. And I think what we've been seeing a lot of, and I think a lot of our conversations on our team too lately, is just around like anger and T1D and
Oh, yeah.
how that manifests in the body over time, right? This, anger with T1D or anger at the healthcare system, anger at what your life was and what it could have been, and just this anger. And maybe, somebody listening could use. Maybe says to themselves, "Wow, I didn't know that it was anger, but like this is actually what it is and is a word for it and is the feeling." But it leads to a lot of things, right? Like that leads to shame. It leads to comparison. It leads to a lack of confidence. It leads to bullying, right? Like bullying of other people. It leads to resentment towards your body, right? That unresolved relationship with yourself manifests and projects out in a lot of different ways.
Exactly.
And yeah, and I think that that's the biggest thing too in my journey has been watching my emotions and really understanding my thought processes. And also when I'm doing things like comparing myself to somebody else or, feeling shame or feeling a lack of confidence. Whatever it is, it's coming from a certain place, right? It never has anything to do about the other person or the other thing. It's always about holding up a mirror to ourselves, and that thing is triggering it, right? And so, I work to really, and I have over the years, and it kind of started with yoga, in college, to slow down and watch my thoughts instead of being in them and get in touch with my feelings and emotions. And of course, if you have access to a therapist or a psychologist, I know not everybody does, but that can be extremely helpful in being able to help you navigate those feelings as well. But what are your thoughts on big tent community, right? And instead of putting other people down based on their experiences or projecting our anger outwards, really saying, you know what, we're all in the same boat. We all share pretty much, some experiences that are similar, but, in the same boat, that compared to tearing other people down, of like, just we see it in Facebook groups too, of like even parents, right? Parents who go in there saying, "Oh, my kid had a donut and their blood sugar went high," and then other parents attacking, being like, "Well, you shouldn't have let your kid have a donut." And it's like, let's just like respect each other's journeys, you know?
Right. I think it's really important, like you said, to kind of take a look at where is that coming from for you, and realizing that, again, everyone is on their own journey, trying their best. And so I've also found a way to separate myself a little bit. Like if I find that someone is having that reaction towards me, then I just take a step back and I'm like, okay, let me think about maybe what this person is going through, maybe something that is unresolved for them, and let me just respect that. It's so funny because I feel like a lot of times people come to our conversations, whether it's like an enrollment call or a coaching call, and they say something and they say it like with a little bit of like a precursor, like, ooh, this might be like, a little bad, or this might feel like, I don't know, however it is, but that emotion is coming up. And I'm like, listen, I am never going to judge you for whatever you do because you don't need that. Nobody needs that. This is a no judgment zone. And that is because I've worked through my own stuff and I know that there's no reason to judge anybody else because I don't know all the details of your story, of your background, of your intentions. I'm going to try to understand that and work through that with you, but I don't know that right off the bat. So there's always no judgment, no judgment at all. And I think that's very important, is understanding that if someone is coming to you with no judgment, they probably worked through those things. And if you are going into a situation with a judgment or a preconceived notion, then maybe you need to take a step back and say, like, where is this coming from for me? Where is this coming from for me?
Right. Like I even think about, Chris, my fiance, for anybody who doesn't know listening, he is amazing, like so supportive of everything and, with diabetes, but he has this one thing that he does. And I think Jess, I was talking to you about this recently or somebody else, but this one thing he does that just every time he does
Oh, yeah.
it like triggers me. And so we'll be out to dinner and I'll go for like I'll have a piece of bread, let's say, right? And then I'll have a second piece of bread and he'll be like, "Babe, don't have that second piece." And I'm just like, "What?" And like, "Excuse me, like don't mess with me and my bread." And he'll be like, "Your blood sugar's gonna go high." And I get triggered by it because for so many years, like I didn't allow myself to have those things. And now I have the tools to be able to bolus and, take care of my numbers. But him and I have been together for like 11 years. Over 11 years now. And so he's used to too, my old self, where I maybe would stay up all night and couldn't handle that. And so he has the best intentions, but it's coming from a place of, he's worried about me, right? He just
Yeah,
cares about me. And it's
he
not like this
cares.
big thing, but it's a little passing statement. But I am working through, it's like the one thing that I'm continuing to work through of like not getting triggered by it, because I realize like he's coming from a place of love and care, and I'm coming and I have to, it's about me, it's not about him, right? The feeling that
Right.
I'm feeling is not about what he's doing or what he's saying. It's actually just about like how I'm receiving it. So, I think what we're saying here too is just it comes down to being aware of why other people do and say what they do and looking at their intentions and maybe what is unresolved within them or what's going on with their life. And then also for you, like taking ownership of the triggers that you have or your past experiences and how you interpret things and know that it's not about you, right?
Right.
It's about them sometimes. It's about, their care for you, whatever it is. So
Yeah. And communication at the end of the day, right? Like that's a lesson that like slaps me in the face over and over again every day. It's like, and I'm sure you've noticed, you're trying not to react to Chris, but it's also about like communicating that with him. This is how this made me feel. And, Ollie and I communicate that way sometimes too about our relationships, about anything that comes up, small, big. And you have to kind of take a step back and say, like, okay, well, what was your intention here? You said this. This is how it made me feel. And knowing at the end of the day, like, he didn't mean to hurt me and he can be a big enough person. We can be a big, each of us in our own right and respects can be the bigger person and say, I'm sorry, or this is where this came from. But communication is a big piece in that as well, so that you can clear the air and move on and also understand. I think at the end of the day, it's like developing that understanding instead of just continuing to harbor that feeling or that resentment or that insert here, whatever it is that you're feeling.
Right. And I mean, everything that we've talked about for, the last half an hour comes down to your understanding of yourself and self-awareness and slowing down and mindfulness. And man, diabetes is so much more than just the carbs and the
Oh,
insulin.
yeah.
And it's so multifaceted. And if we don't look at all these areas, we're not going to be able to feel a sense of, confidence in our lives with diabetes, or we'll constantly feel resentment towards it, right? If we're not looking at these areas and having the space to, work our toolbox. So, I want to end off with you with a lightning round. We're going to do a lightning round, which
Okay,
means it's so
ready.
funny. I did an IG live with my parents last year on what it was like getting diagnosed as a
Yeah.
child. And I did a lightning round, and my dad took like 5 minutes to answer that. And after he did, I was like, okay, so if we could just like cut off 4.5 minutes from that would be great. We'll refilm that.
I feel like I might have that tendency, but I'm going to try really hard. It's going to be fast, fast,
It'll be
fast.
great. And I'll answer them too. So, okay. Do you use basal rates or extended boluses more?
Ooh,
Or temp basals,
temp.
sorry. Temp basals
I
or
was going to
extended
say.
boluses?
So I used to use extended boluses more, but right now temp basals are my best friend.
Me too. I'm like a temp basal girl for sure.
Yeah.
One piece of diabetes education that changed the game for you.
I think the way that different aspects of food, how they impact your blood sugars differently. I didn't know that.
You didn't?
No.
Really? Like
Didn't know that.
how long did you go? I mean, I didn't either, actually.
I want to say oh my gosh, like 13 years, give or take.
Yeah,
A long
that's
time.
a lot of meals. A lot of meals with not
A
knowing what the
lot of
heck is going
meals.
on.
Yeah.
For me, I would say hormones. Like I will stand by this, and people can come after me, but diabetes is 1,000 times harder for women than it is for men, hands down. It is. Of course, and just at the basis of it, right? Like not adding any extra layers of complexity or things like that, but or people's experiences, but just because of the hormones, right? It just is an added layer. It's an added layer of a challenge because you're going through a, 24, 5 to 30 2 day cycle, right? Give or take a few days. And your hormones are changing throughout the entire thing. So, if anybody's having challenges with hormones, go check out our cornerstone class on menstrual cycle and diabetes. Yes, I'm plugging that there because it is a great resource.
Yes, and you are not looking at this and like completely missing something, or you're not like, I hate using the word crazy, but like you're not crazy. You
Yeah.
know, you're not
Yeah.
crazy. There is
There's a reason.
something. There is something there.
There are things that contribute to our highs and lows.
Yes.
Okay, best tip for stress and blood sugars.
I think realizing that in whatever stressful situation that you're in, just take a moment for yourself. However you want to frame that, whatever you want that to look like for you, in that stressful moment with diabetes, blood sugars, just take a moment for yourself.
Yeah. I think for mine is do not be afraid to give more insulin if your body needs it, right? Stress does cr crazy things for insulin resistance or increasing your blood sugar numbers. And if your body needs more insulin, of course, consult with your nearest doctor,
Of
but
course. Okay.
you may need more insulin and don't be afraid of that. And yeah, that's what I would say. Okay, Dexcom Share, yes or no, and why or why not?
Lauren, you knew this. You knew this, I think. But Dexcom Share is a big no for me. It's a big no for me. And the reason why is because, and I know this is a quick fire, but I'm going to do a little story here. My husband was on Dexcom Share, and every time he saw something change, or he saw like an alarm, or the number go to a certain place. He would text me, call me, again, well-meaning, loves me, wants me to just be safe. I didn't need that.
Right.
It caused so much stress in my life. And it was also just, it felt like I didn't have independence in that for me, right? Mm-hmm. For some people, it's life-changing. And if you feel like you need that safety net and that support, please, by all means, have all the people that you want on Dexcom Share. I'm just saying this is my personal experience. Dexcom Share is a no for me, caused too much anxiety. He got the boot. He is no longer on Dexcom Share. He hears the alarms if he's in the room with me, but, you know, that's it. That's it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I knew that, but I love hearing you explain the story. But yeah, it's a no for me too. Chris, I will say there's been times where I've utilized it, like very, very rarely. Actually, you know what? Wait a second. Hold on. I actually think Chris is on Dexcom Share. I think he's, now that I'm thinking about it, I don't even know, but I think he's on Dexcom Share, but maybe he has like urgent lows. And like, I'm not having like urgent lows. I don't think, if it's possible to only set it to urgent lows, I think that's what he's on. But I was going to say the reason why I put that on was because I had a really, really bad low a couple, maybe like 2 years ago, taking inhalable insulin for the first time. And that kind of freaked me out. And I was like, whoa, okay, maybe this Dexcom Share thing we should like just check out, because he was at a bar with his friends and I was texting him like, I never, ever like, I love that he goes out and like, if I'm staying in, like we're totally, you know, like supportive of each other. But I kind of was like, and I wouldn't normally ruin his fun, but I'm like, I'm nervous. I know you're around the block. Like, I think I need you to come back. And I never would do that. So he was kind of like running back to me, like bursting through the door. But okay. And last one, this is just a fun one. Favorite drink of choice.
Okay. Are you talking regular drink or non-alcohol?
So the fifth question was going to be like, what's your favorite like low drink of choice? But then I was like, let's just make it fun. Like, why not? It's at least when we're recording this, it's a Friday. So
my favorite drink is and always be water. I know people can't see, but I have this huge jug of water. I always have a water bottle on me. I'm always have like a mug with maybe some lemons in it. Water. I love water, 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 water. Now, if I am thinking about my Friday night, the weekend, if I'm hanging out with my friends, give me a margarita. I love margaritas. Yes, I do. Salt rim. Salted
rim. That is the
rim.
Bond that we have. Salt rim always, always. Oh my gosh. I'm so glad you said something out like with alcohol, because when you started going with water, I'm like, wait, maybe she didn't get what I was saying. Like, I want her. And I was like, shoot, I'm going to come out with like my drink and look really bad. But anyways, so I will preface this by saying that I did not have a normal college experience. I did not drink in college. I did not drink really until my like, I would say like 2 years ago, maybe like really start drinking. Maybe previous to that, I would have one drink a year. And it was because I was
again,
so obsessed with health and diabetes.
Lauren,
and all that.
I was a party animal. I was
party girl,
again, living up to that rebel expectation that was put on me. I was like, I am going to take all of this in.
Yeah, absolutely. I that's, you know, polar opposites. But for me now, it's like, I'm not a crazy drinker, but like I enjoy a glass of red wine with, you know, pasta or meal. Like I really do enjoy that. And my fun drink, the only liquor I can drink is tequila. So I'm like a Moscow mule girl. Is it a Mexican mule? Chris always orders for me, but it's, I think a Moscow mule, but with tequila, it's a Mexican mule, or maybe it's reverse, but I like that. Or a margarita, of course.
I'm a margarita. So I'm with all you, the girl. Way, all the way.
I'm
and
with
yes,
you.
Tequila. Love tequila.
All right. Tequila. It's just like, it's just fun. It's just fun. But when I would be in college, I was like singing, I was doing karaoke, and everyone's like, oh my God, she's like so drunk. And I'm just like, literally have water in my hand, but I can have a good time like without alcohol. So I think that always like helped.
And
just,
now
you know, feel
I
like
will
I fit
say
in.
I am definitely more balanced in this approach. Like I am no longer a diehard party girl, but yes, I can have fun. I can have fun.
Yeah. Jess is like, disclaimer, everyone, yeah. Just so you know. Okay, last question before we go. So we ask everybody, or we will be asking everybody on the podcast moving forward when we have guests, you know, how they reclaim their rise. Why do you think sharing about how you reclaim your rise is important? Why do you think it's important for everybody to hear how other people reclaim their rise with diabetes?
This is important. It's important to understand how to reclaim your own rise, because I think my interpretation of this is it allows you to be who you are authentically in any and every situation. So if you are listening to, you know, a story, or you're listening to something on this podcast and it resonates with you and it makes you think about like, ooh, yeah, maybe I had that type of feeling, or, you know, maybe that's something that I should look into a little bit more. Or if you're, you know, again, going throughout your life and just thinking about that, you know, reclaiming your rise, I think taking in those experiences, learning more about yourself, reclaiming your rise. And for me, I'm going to go back to that story of like the endocrinologist and reclaiming that for myself, reclaiming that rise, literally the 13 A1C, and saying like, no, that's not who I am. This is who I am. This is who I am. And, you know, at the end of the day, again, this is more of like a personal note. Diabetes is very important to me. Obviously, it's what I, part of what I do every day, but it is not all of me. And even if I were to, someone said, you know, Jess, who are you? And I were to list out a bunch of things of like who I am, what represents me, diabetes wouldn't even be close to the top of that list. And again, not because it's not important to me, just because I am so many other things. I'm so many other things. And so I think in reclaiming your rise, it's just about reclaiming who you are, understanding that fully, and showing up to every situation authentically yourself.
Oh my gosh. I mean, I was going to add to that, but I'm not. We're going to end on that, because that was so well said, so beautifully put, so inspiring, Jess, as usual. Thank you so much for coming on to co-host with me today.
Will you invite me back, Lauren?
I don't know. If you want Jess to come back on the podcast, maybe talk about pregnancy or any other topics you think, let us know. Shoot me a DM on Instagram. But if you enjoyed this episode, help it rise up. We're new kids on the block. So wherever you're streaming this, listening to this, please rate it. Please review it. Please share this episode. And we'll see you next week. Bye, guys.
Bye.